Hey there, this is Seth Juarez again coming to you from Austin, Texas. We're at ChefConf. This is a not so good looking version of Joe Breslin. Sorry about that. I have some special guests here today to talk a little bit about some Microsoft technologies that are very interesting and that need some kind of automation. So why don't you introduce yourselves, tell us who you are and what you do.
So I'm Narayanan Lakshmanan. I go by Nana. I'm engineering manager for PowerShell Desired State Configuration.
Mm-hmm. Desired State Configuration, PowerShell Desired State. And you, sir?
My name is PowerShell. I'm a program manager in the Azure Compute team. And I look after our open source development and DevOps strategies for our containerized and microservices application.
Wow, that's a lot of big words. Yes. So let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about Desired State Configuration with PowerShell. I've heard about it, but I'm not quite sure how or why it works.
So Desired State Configuration is the configuration management platform for managing, you know, based on PowerShell. So you declare your system's desired configuration using a set of language extensions in PowerShell, and then you compile that into what we call a configuration document, which is MOF-based. The document then gets delivered to the DSC agent, which is available both on Windows and Linux, and the agent then takes the system onto the desired state.
So let's talk about desired state configuration. Like you said the output was a what kind of document?
It's a document in the MOF format.
What's MOF format? I'm a dev, so pretend I don't know anything. It should be super easy for you. I'm a dev, and so generally, like, I'm worried about making sure my code compiles, and then I check it in and something magical happens. So what is this?
So if you're a dev, all you do is you author in PowerShell, and it's similar to invoking a PowerShell function. You basically compile a configuration. It produces an intermediate artifact. You really don't have to worry about what the format is. Then there are a set of commandlets. You use them to deliver the artifact onto the node, and the agent then processes it to take it to a desired state. So you really don't have to worry about the format.
So is it gonna spin up a machine, or is it gonna be on a machine that's later gonna be configured the right way?
Oh, it's not gonna spin up a machine, but once the machine spins up, the agent comes up, and the document gets delivered to the node, and the agent then processes the document to take the node or the machine into a desired state.
I see. And what are some of the things that you can configure in the desired state?
So you can configure things like, you know, primitives like file, registry, service, all the way up to you can model anything in DSC, any entity that can be configured. We call it a resource. So you can model higher level abstractions like IIS, SQL, SharePoint, different things as a resource, and anything with a set of properties can be configured.
So effectively what you're doing is the machine starts, the agent delivers this document, and then all of a sudden these things are sort of fired up.
Yeah, and now magically, you know, once the document is fully processed, your machine is in the final desired state where you want it to be. You want it to be your, you know, application server, you want it to be your SQL backend, whatever you want that system to look like. DSC will make it so.
And you mentioned that this actually works on Linux, but PowerShell doesn't work on Linux. So how does this sort of process work on a Linux box?
So here is why we generate the intermediate document. So you author your desired state in PowerShell, and then, you know, it produces this intermediate document. And there is a version of the DSC agent available on Linux. And once the document gets delivered, then the agent processes it to take the system to the desired state.
And so effectively, desired state configuration is a way to get a machine to where you want it to be once it's started.
Yeah.
And that could be either a Windows box or a Linux box.
Yes.
So we're going to transition a little bit now to talk a little bit about sort of microservices. People have heard about microservices, so why don't you give us a two-minute elevator pitch on what it is.
All right, so I think the biggest thing about microservices is that you break down a big application into smaller independent services. That being said, it doesn't mean you should start with microservices. You typically start with a monolith, right? Where all your functionality is encapsulated in is what's called a monolith,
right?
So, but at certain times, you want to break out certain functionality because, for example, component A needs to wrap faster than component B, right? Has a different release cycle, has a different upgrade cycle. Also, it may have different resource requirements, right? So if you think about like a monolith application as it used to be, the way to scale it is you basically took a copy and put it on virtual machines.
Right.
So, but that means you scale out the entire application. With microservices, what it really comes down to is you actually break it down into smaller individual services, and now you can scale them independently based on their resource requirements. Another good advantage is, because there's so many technologies out there, with microservices, you can actually use the tools and languages that are best for that certain scenario. Because it's typically centered around a business scenario, it's an encapsulated service, so it is self-contained, you deploy it to somewhere, right? And it just communicates with other services through well-known interfaces. So and by doing that, it's very loosely coupled. You can update it independently, you can upgrade it, you can deploy it independently, have different, accommodate different scale requirements, and so on and so forth.
It feels like though, I don't know, as a dev, when I'm deploying stuff, and I'm solving a problem, and now I'm using distributed kind of systems, now I have two problems, right?
Oh yeah. So, it's a good point. What I keep telling people now is there's a huge hype around microservices, right? But as with everything in life, it comes with a cost, right? It's almost like you pay a tax for it.
Right.
Because now, as you said, all of a sudden you enter the world of distributed computing. You have all those loosely coupled services, many of them. They need to communicate with each other, right? So they need to find each other
right. In
a cluster, right? And you cannot tie it to a node, because if that node goes down, a scheduler or an orchestrator just spins it up on another node.
Yeah.
So you need to think about that. The other thing is, as those microservices communicate through APIs, well-defined APIs, you need to think about things like data serialization, deserialization, because you're exchanging data.
Right.
And then if you have multiple microservices that span multiple scenarios, let's say you have a microservice for your catalog, right, a product catalog. You have a microservice for your data, right? And typically microservices have their own data store. You need to think about data consistency across the data store. So it's great, right? But it comes as a tax. That's why we typically say, start out with a monolith. There's nothing wrong with it. And then break it off if you need to accommodate different languages, frameworks, different release cycles, different scale requirements.
So obviously we're at ChefConf and we're talking a lot about DevOps. It feels like there's a lot of DevOps works that needs to happen when you're doing these kinds of applications. And PowerShell desired state configuration could obviously help. So let's talk a little bit about sort of the process as you're building these sort of microservices types of applications. What are some things that you need to keep in mind? And also another question, I know there's a lot of them. How small is too small for a microservice, right? So let's start with that. How small is too small?
Well, I think there is no golden rule how small a...
There's gotta be, man. Are you killing me?
No, there is some other company who basically has this two pizza rule, right?
Yeah.
So if you can feed a team with two pizzas, and that produces the code, it's probably the amount of it.
Right.
So the way you can think about it is I think more about like in terms of a bounded context, right? It encapsulates a business scenario. And if it grows to a certain point where it becomes really hard to manage with integration work, then you break it off. But there's no real thing that says, hey, a microservice has only 1,500 lines of code.
Right. Right.
It's just not there.
Now that we know, I mean, how do you manage these things properly? Like, if I'm building an application, right, and I know I have five or six microservices, how do I deploy effectively?
So there are actually, it also depends on your platform, right? So because let's start with the platform. We have in Azure, we have Azure Service Fabric, which abstracts all of that stuff away from you. It makes it super easy to build a microservice-based application. But then in the open source world, you typically run like cluster management and orchestration software on top of Linux. So for example, use Mesosphere's DCOS, use Docker Swarm, use Kubernetes, right? When it comes to deployment, you also need to differentiate between a native microservice or a containerized microservice. Because that's also what a lot of people confuse quite often.
Sure.
It's like you can build microservices entirely without containers. Right? Matter of truth is most of microservices systems are built with containers. And then you can think about a flow goes like that. You check in your code, there are different ways of working with containers. You check in your code into a repo that builds it, but it doesn't just build the code, it also builds the container image. Right?
I see.
So and then you have your immutable environment. That container image gets uploaded into a registry, Docker Hub or a private registry, and then you have some CD flow, like continuous delivery deployment flow, that puts it out in a cluster.
So I don't want to leave you out here. How can PowerShell desired state configuration help when deploying these kinds of services?
So one of the things that we do in PowerShell, right, is PowerShell is a platform. Disaster state configuration is a platform based on which different other technologies can consume on top. So in many of the cases for ingest customization when you deploy, disaster state configuration is used. We have examples in like Azure Resource Manager. There are like templates in the Azure Gallery that can do a SharePoint farm deployment, for instance. There's an ARM template that has all the provisioning, but the ingest customization is done using DSC. Similarly, we also have, you know, examples. There was a session this afternoon about, like, you know, how can Chef consume DSC artifacts in terms of setting up SharePoint. We also have the notion of what we call proxies, where you have like the DSC agent acting as a proxy, talking to different services, trying to provision them. So we have some of those proxy resources that we use for, you know, provisioning services in Azure or even in Amazon EC2 for that matter.
So let's talk a little bit about ARM templates and what the relationship is between an ARM template and a PowerShell desired state configuration document, for example. Are they the same thing? Are they different things? What is one doing that the other one is not, vice versa?
So ARM is used for provisioning the environment. And what you could do is in your ARM template, you can invoke a DSC configuration. So you specify the script. And then there is a hook. So what happens is once the VM is provisioned, the ARM infrastructure loads the DSC extension on that, and then it basically, you know, pulls down the configuration script, compiles, and locally invokes it to do all of the ingest customization within that.
So the ARM template is more of a thing that sets up the infrastructure, here's all the machines, and desired state configuration is, okay, now that you have this machine, this is what I want on the machine.
Right.
And this has got to be invaluable when you're setting up microservices, for example.
It is. I mean, you could argue if you use like cluster management and orchestration tools like DCOS or Kubernetes that everything is there. But I think ingest customizations still have their place, especially if you think about like configuration management type of stuff, right? Because you want to have certain directories that hold certain configuration on every node, right? Through things like PowerShell, DSC, or Chef, you can ensure that. And then you basically your application or your containers, your containerized application read that configuration.
So obviously we're here at ChefConf. Do you guys have talks that you're giving here at Chef? Let's start with you.
Yeah, so I have a session tomorrow that's how to write DSC resources and how to consume them from Chef. So our DSC resources, you know, we follow the community-based open source development model, and you know, what's a better place than Chef, which is completely community-driven?
Sure. So describe what it is that those things are that you just mentioned.
So DSC resources, think of any entity that you know, you can configure, is called a resource. Like resource can be as simple as a file, service, to higher level abstractions like IIS or SQL or whatnot, right? Any entity that you can model with a set of designated properties.
Right.
And then DSC resource, come to think of it, you know, from a PowerShell perspective, is nothing like but a pattern of scripting. So you define a resource with a set of properties, and then you got to implement a set of methods that tells me, hey, is that in the desired state? If not, then how to get it to a desired state? Give me a set of properties. And then how do you put these script in a particular pattern so they become reusable artifacts? And then how do you actually share it with the PowerShell community? How do you download, reuse them, so on and so forth?
I see. So it's a way of describing a particular setup, more or less?
Way of describing a particular entity, yes.
I see. And how many different kinds of entities are there? Is there?
So as of now, we have about 302 resources in DSC in the community space, and it's growing.
Well, and can you describe like an example of a resource? Is it just a machine, a file system?
So we have, you know, file, service, registry, certificate, user, group, SQL Server, SharePoint, web administration.
I see. So effectively, if there is something you want to sort of spec out or build out, there's probably already a resource, DSC resource for it.
Yeah, if not, my session will teach you how to write one, and then, you know, how to integrate that with Chef as well.
That's awesome. So tell us about, are you doing any talks here?
I just had mine.
Tell us about yours.
So I was talking about building modern cloud applications / microservices in Azure. Mm-hmm. And I was basically talking through what a microservice is, all the theory, why it's great, why everybody's jumping on that. But then I was also touching on the downsides, and we talked about that a little bit, right?
Sure.
It becomes a complex system. And then I was showing people how to think about an end-to-end very modern DevOps flow with fully automated CI and CD, meaning continuous delivery and continuous deployment into the cluster. And then I wrapped up the session by talking about Azure as an open platform,
right?
Because we have tremendous support for Linux, pretty much everything you want to run, which your customers have invested their knowledge in, tools and so on and so forth. You run that on Azure, and you run that fairly well.
So I think we have a really good opportunity right now to talk about sort of your perspectives on what DevOps is, particularly because in an application as complex as a microservices application, you really have to think about that. And you really think about it at sort of a more micro level of configuration. So why don't you spend some time describing like what DevOps is to you and how you see the technologies that you work on embracing that or forming part of that. Go ahead.
So DSE is, you know, is our way to get people to describe, you know, get into the DevOps culture, right? It's the easiest way. You know, the traditional Windows admins started with GUI clicking, and then they started writing some sort of automation. But how do you get into this agile world of DevOps? And DSE is the stepping stone or your entry point. And that the way it helps is it helps people get into the enterprise DevOps mode and finally move your applications onto the cloud.
So DSE you see as a foundational sort of piece on getting on the road DevOps.
Yeah.
So what about you, my friend? DevOps, what does it mean to you?
Oh, well, I think in general, you need to think about the entire flow, different groups of, or different personas involved.
Right? Right.
So a lot of the traditional responsibility that was done by IT departments is shifting towards developers, right? And we've seen a lot of enterprises where the traditional flow was, you had like your developers, they checked in some code, they dropped or spit out a build, then some IT people said, hey, does that thing work? Deployed it into some cluster, they did some testing.
Right. Right.
So DevOps is basically, in my mind, a collaboration of all those tasks. It starts, if you look at it from a task perspective, it starts with code check-in, it goes into like testing the code check-in, right? Having unit testing, deploying your artifacts, and then more importantly, also monitoring
sure.
your services, right? It's basically a 360 with many people involved. And I think the biggest difference, what's happening with modern cloud applications is you have a slight trade-off there. There is a nice saying, right? You need to decide between safe and fast.
Right.
Because safe means you put a lot of testing in there. It's more like the traditional model, and then you deploy it. You have basically the checkbox. Say, hey, this is a golden build, we roll it out, right? That comes at the cost of speed, right?
Right?
And fast, on the other hand, is very much like, hey, you know what? You build it, you ship it, right? And you're responsible for it. So I think overall, to sum up, like my mind, DevOps is a, it's basically a practice which has a bunch of tasks involved that typically or used to span multiple personas, multiple departments, and is now more like a flow.
So would you say that DevOps is more of a cultural thing versus a technology thing?
I think, let's face it, right? So distributed systems, are hard. It's
yeah.
not rocket science. People can build it, right? If you think about fully automated DevOps flows, it's automation is fine, right? It really comes down to an organizational thing. Because a lot of traditional companies that go into that modern world, they need to think about the deployment differently, especially
right.
they want to be fast to market. That also means some people need to give up responsibilities, some other people gain more responsibilities. Right? It's not like that anymore that you say, hey, I checked in my code, I walk away, if that thing goes down, I have an admin who boots up my machine. Right? So that's like you build it, you ship it. Right? So I think that's...
That's awesome. So why don't you talk about your products and sort of where you see these products going? What are some things that you would like to see in the future with desired state configuration? What are some things that you'd like the community to sort of feed back to you?
So, you know, desired state configuration, we are trying to make it as the platform of choice for managing things on Windows and Linux, and as well, you know, help people transform, you know, learning. They already have their PowerShell skill sets, using that to get into the DevOps world, right? So that is the area in which we are investing as well, you know, things around tooling for DevOps and the infrastructure and things like that. At the same time, you know, we are going more towards community-driven model, and that's where we want, like, you know, feedback from the community, right? We basically go where the community is.
Right.
So we participate in GitHub, you know, a whole bunch of our projects you can find in github.com/PowerShell.
Uh-huh.
All the DSC resource development happens there. We also, like, you know, participate in PowerShell.org forums and Stack Overflow, wherever the community is, right? So we are listening. And the feedback channel, we are more trying to get towards the community-based development overall, and any feedback from the community is appreciated.
Have you gotten some good feedback already, or have there been some resources that people have given you that have been really cool?
Oh yeah, so we started by putting out resources and started taking contributions. So now it has come down to a point where, you know, there have been completely community-written resources that are available in our repos, as well as resources taken to a quality which will be like, enterprises, which traditionally, you know, wanted the seal of approval, they are comfortable taking it. We call them as high-quality resources. It's like as good as shipping them inbox.
Right.
So, they have all been like maintained by people outside of the team, and we are getting closer towards, 1,000 pull requests that we have accepted from the community. So it's been growing great ever since we went down this open source model. And the only thing we worry is, why didn't we start on this sooner?
That's awesome. So with microservices, there's like 1,000 ways to skin a cat on this one. What is it that we're doing as a company to help people go down that path if they so desire?
All right, so I think as I mentioned before, our turnkey microservice solution, where developers can just focus on writing the code, not to worry about things like service registry discovery, is Service Fabric.
Right.
So we're gonna take it to the next level. We'll introduce, or have introduced for Linux, Service Fabric container support, so that if you guys want to take advantage of a better isolation than, let's say, a job object on Windows, and you want to use containers for that, you can, also for the immutable environment. On container service and our other workloads, especially with DCOS, Docker Swarm, we've gotten strong feedback that while Azure, it's great that there's such an open cloud, they want us to have a little bit more of an opinion how the DevOps flow should look like.
I see.
So we're currently thinking about what would be a good DevOps flow for a microservice-based application. Right? We're looking at very popular open source tools like Jenkins. We're thinking about, should we offer that as a service?
Right.
So those are like all thoughts right now, but I think where we take it from a microservices perspective is really think about, for our microservices platform, we light up container support, and then for the overall DevOps strategy, we're thinking about having a little bit more of an opinion to help people kickstart a microservices environment.
So we have about 2 minutes left, so I'll give you about a minute each. Tell us a little bit about how we can find out more about desired state configuration, where we can go to learn, and what are some resources that we should look to ramp up in that technology.
So to learn anything about DSC and PowerShell in general, you can go to microsoft.com/PowerShell. That'll be the entry point that will take you to the various pages. And if you want to check out our open source project, you can go to github.com/PowerShell, mm-hmm. and it'll have all the open source projects that are part of PowerShell and DSC listed out in there.
Fantastic, all right.
All right, so if you guys are interested in Service Fabric, go to azure.com, Service Fabric, Container Service, Container Service. For microservices specifically, if you go to nva.microsoft.com, which is Microsoft Virtual Academy, we recorded a bunch of courses like Introduction to Microservices, Microservices Patterns and Practices,
right.
Building Microservices on Azure Container Service, and Building Microservices on Azure Service Fabric. It's a good starting point. It's very rich content. Like, it's not just a list of features. It's really like end to end, how you build it, how you run it.
And I think we also recorded one with Mark Rasinovich on microservices in general,
totally.
And Service Fabric, which are really good. All right, well, anything else in parting, my friends?
No, cool conference.
You guys are good stuff, huh? The fun thing about this conference is it really is community based. I love where DSC is going on taking sort of DSC resources as a community thing, and I love the feedback that we get on using microservices. And we support a very wide range of service-oriented kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We're at ChefConf in Austin, Texas, live. If you have questions, again, submit them via #ChefConfLive, and we will take them as they come. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you after the break.